Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you?
Hello, mate. How you doing? I like the fact that you've got a lovely little bedroom that you are doing your work from. How big is that room that you're in? Because the people at home can't see you, but they will probably be able to see you on your YouTube channel because you do a lot of filming in that room. How? Because I've recently seen the Trash Taste Boys. They're changing or moving studios.
You love Trash Taste. Seen that. You watch it more than Abroad in Japan. Traitor.
I've not watched Trash Taste recently, thank you. I just saw Joey's picture on Twitter, and it just seems like they've got quite a big room, but your room's a little bit more smaller.
Don't rub it in. Trash taste is good.
Well, there's
You're
only
the
one of you, and there's three of those bastards.
I'm hoping to go and see the studio in a couple of weeks and check it out and join a show maybe, but I think there's three of them. They've got like a whole team. Like Trash Taste is an empire. Abroad in Japan is me with a side dish of Natsuki and Ryotaro and you and a few others. But like, I mean, I do the podcasts the exact same place I sit in the videos, right? In my studio area. And it's a very small space. Like when Connor came here to film the fried chicken video back in April, he was like, oh gosh, what is this? It's so small. mate, I can't sit in here. It's so small. Oh God. And the time I did the Abroad in Japan podcast with him, he was like, oh gosh, there's only one microphone. Because we had to sit around one microphone. And he was like, oh, you have two microphones. Oh gosh. And it's bloody annoying. Rubbing it
to
in.
Be fair, like, Chris, you, I mean, if you're going to be eating loads and loads of congealed chicken goods, it's going to start to smell pretty bad pretty quickly, I'd say.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. The apartment smelled like a rubbish skip. It smelled like a waste industrial site. It's awful. But it is a small space. But like, my philosophy is I could rent a studio the size of Trash Taste But why would I want to do that? It doesn't make like I think if I
you do all of your filming outside,
the podcast would like that, then I would. But I do, and my philosophy has always been to be mobile and flow like a river, flow like water, as Bruce Lee said.
Cool.
That's the philosophy that drives a Roaring
Japan. You sound like a cool guy.
Exactly.
Sorry, cool guy.
I sound like a cool guy. I am cool. Of course I'm cool. Roaring Japan, have you known?
Journey Across Japan is upon us, Chris. You have been mobile and you've edited all your videos and Journey Across Japan is nearly here. When's it coming out, you big prick?
Well, so, this episode is coming out on Wednesday, right? This is Wednesday. Yes. So the episode should be out now. If it's not out now, then I've done something terribly wrong.
Something's happened, mate. I mean, your hard drive, your Lacey drives have all broken down.
At time of recording, we haven't uploaded the episode, but it is about Kagoshima. It's about Yakushima Island. And the main point of the first episode is the airplane, which is something we've talked about heavily on the podcast over the last few months, the plane ride from hell. But I think it's going to be a fun episode. The highlight is not just the plane, but when I threw Natsuki into a waterfall. When he wasn't expecting that. That was very cathartic. Yeah. But check that out, guys. It's coming out. The first episode, I'm at the difficult stage where I have to think of the title of the episode. And the sad thing about YouTube is the fate of your video is basically determined by every letter, every word, everything you write, you know. So the last video, 12 Reasons Not to Move to Japan, did well. It's almost on target for 1 million views because it's provocative. Mm. It's on point. You know what you're getting. Mm. As for this one, I'm thinking of doing something like I flew in Japan's most dangerous plane, or I flew in Japan's most dangerous airplane. What do you think? Mm. Any ideas? You're a genius.
I pooped my pants miles above sea level.
I'm above
a big scaredy boy.
How dare
I'm a big scaredy boy, and I nearly fell in a volcano because I'm silly.
There's a good reason we don't let Pete label the podcast titles. I strictly, like a communist dictator, I oversee and censor and oversee every title and word.
Well, it's why we become a success, to be quite frank. If it was just up to me, we'd be terrible.
I put all these effort into like well slick titled podcasts, and then when you do it, it's like I saw a walrus, and it's just like some weird line. Like, I saw a pen.
Correct.
It's just like something that has no
draw
context.
Them in. It's like, where's that? What happened there? They're thinking, what's Pete and Chris been up to this week?
Let's
click and find out, shall we?
What they think?
Let's fill our hungry ears with ace content.
Bloody hell. Well, check it out, guys. The first episode of Journey Across Japan should be out now, and it should be good. I hope it is. I'm halfway through editing it right now.
Trailer was very good.
The trailer was very good, but it set expectations high. But the first episode, I think it's going to be almost 30 minutes long, so it's a bumper episode, and should be good. Got a story here from Ramek. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Love the podcast. It makes my daily commute much more bearable." The following is a true story of when my friend and I were staying in Kyoto. We arrived at our Airbnb, kind of weirded out by the place. The front door was unlocked. Bloody hell. And we walked in to find used futons and a house that seemed lived in. It was as if we'd just walked into somebody's house. I don't like where this is going. After a big day out in Kyoto, we arrived back and began to experience what can only be described as a series of paranoia-inducing supernatural happenings. Ooh, sounds exciting. It all began when our curiosity got the better of us and we looked into one of the drawers to find a rusty handsaw, just like from the first Saw movie. We also found very old credit cards for a redacted name. My heart froze when I realized this name was very similar. Oh, I see. He's redacted the name. He's just written redacted.
Yes.
My heart froze. I'm slow. My heart froze when I realized this redacted name was very similar to the ghost from The Ring. I reassured my friend that it is a common name and there was nothing to be afraid of, but deep down, I was terrified. We continued to see and hear spooky things. My friend heard someone bang on the bathroom window from outside while he was showering, and I saw dirty handprints on the glass window outside the living space that I swear weren't there before. We tried to seek comfort in the TV, but the top right part of the screen began to form a dark circle similar to what would happen if you held a magnet near an old CRT. We were terrified at this point. and dreaded going to sleep. We were strongly considering finding a capsule hotel to sleep in instead. Eventually, I fell asleep, despite the line of Hina dolls watching me. Oh, those dolls are so creepy. From across the room, only to be awoken in the middle of the night by the sound of a sobbing woman right outside my second story window. I was so mentally exhausted that I found the entire situation ridiculously cliche, and I rationalised it as salaryman life. The next day, we were dreading our second and final night in the Airbnb as we thought it would be our final night in this mortal plane. Thankfully, it was uneventful. And we were left wondering if we were cursed or this was an elaborate prank by the locals. Have you ever had a supernatural, scary experience while staying in Japan, guys? From Ramek. Bloody hell. What do you make of that, Pete? It's terrifying.
I mean, I think, I mean, it's very exciting. It's certainly, you know, it's something to talk about in the future. I mean, I'm not a big ghost person, but I think if I could hear sobbing women right outside the second story window, if I could sort of, if I'm hearing people banging on the window, I mean, I would find it very, very difficult. I remember staying in Johannesburg for the World Cup. Didn't get to see any matches, but we went to a lot of fun parks and stuff. It was a lot of fun back in 2012. And there was some animal on the roof that I could not stop. Because, I mean, like, it was just spooky as hell. There's a lot of crime in Johannesburg anyway, but once you start hearing things clambering around the roof, you're like, oh god, what's happening? So I couldn't really sleep very well.
Bloody hell. I mean, I in terms of my experiences with Airbnb, generally it's been good. Stayed at some great places. I did have at one time when I went to Bath in the UK and I got locked inside because the door handle just, the door lock stopped working. And the apartment in question was like in an attic, in like a rooftop apartment, four stories up. So I couldn't jump out the window. Me and my friend were like, how the hell do we get out of here? Like the door could only be opened from the outside of the front door.
Right.
It was a completely surreal situation. I can't, even now, I can't really wrap my head around it. And we rang the guy and we're like, we're locked in the apartment. The front door will not open. And he was like, oh yeah, it's happened before. I don't know what to do. I was like, well, can you come and open it? He's like, I'm in Bristol right now, which is like an hour away. And I was like, what are you on about? Why would this happen? Fortunately, he got the neighbour below, who he knew, to come and open the door for us. But flipping heck, if there had been a fire, that would have been the most depressingly stupid way to go. We died because we couldn't open the front door from the inside. Oh, my God. That's why I don't use Airbnb anymore. Awful. But as for supernatural experiences, have you ever had any supernatural experience? You're not a supernatural man, are you?
No, to be honest, I'm drunk for most of the time. I'm in Japan anyway, so I probably don't even notice. Wouldn't notice a spooky, even if it, you know, reared up in my face, quite frankly. I remember waking up in some place in Japan and my face had gone big.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was very bizarre. Yeah. That was just food poisoning, Pete.
It was something I'd done. I think I was just sleeping on a weird mat. I decided it's a weird mat I was sleeping on.
A mat riddled with cyanide. And Ryota and I stayed at like the most haunted Japanese inn in Tohoku, and it was kind of creepy. There was a creepy vibe going on. I remember at one point we were standing in a room in silence and like a toy bird, just fell off the shelf for no reason. And at the time, we're a little bit scared. We're a little bit like, oh, that's weird. And then when I uploaded the video, someone wrote in the comments, if you look at the bird on the floor, you can see that someone's tried to sellotape the leg together. Because clearly it just falls apart every week. And I was like,
It just falls apart all the time.
And the mystery was probably solved there and then. It was the case of the dodgy bird and the dodgy leg.
Fantastic.
So what we got this week?
Fan-bloody-tastic.
What we got this week in the news front, Pete? I know you're excited about Nintendo.
I mean, you know, Nintendo are about to open. We've already heard of the Nintendo Fairground rides that opened in I think it's Osaka. Tokyo? Yeah, Osaka. We've seen that tiny little fairground that they've made dedicated to Nintendo. But I think for someone who appreciates the history of Nintendo, if not the actual gaming experiences like me, this is right up my street. There's going to be a big Nintendo museum going to be open. The Nintendo Gallery Museum.
Oh, nice.
It's opening in spring 2024. It's going to be built in a place called Uji in Kyoto, which is built in basically inside a plant, like a chemical plant or something, somewhere that's got a lot of storage. But it used to make Western-style playing cards, as well as the Japanese playing cards called Hanafuda that Nintendo obviously made as their first product. And then for a while, it was a video game console repair center, so obviously they've still got a lot of stock there. But operations got transferred elsewhere back in 2016. And so basically, the Nintendo have had this plant, massive, massive plant, in a pretty central location in Uji in Kyoto. Uji sounds a little bit like a Nintendo Uji product, like the Wii U. We're releasing the Uji Plus in quarter four of 2024. Super Nintendo World opened back in March in Universal Studio in Japan with all of like the Bowser rides and stuff. And I'm not a big kind of Nintendo head, but I do appreciate their history and how important they've been for the industry. So yeah, there's going to be a big museum opening in Kyoto, which will be fascinating. I want to see a Nintendo disc system up and running. I want to see that weird Sony PlayStation Nintendo hybrid that they made back in the day. I'd like to see one of them up and running. Amazing.
I mean, that's well great. Worth it. That's only about an hour away from Universal Studios, where the Nintendo theme park is. So you could do both in one long Nintendo-filled day.
Well, let's see. They should have a little pipe going from the actual fairground to the works. Yeah, definitely.
Using some sort of bullet train. I've been to this Kyoto place. This is the place I've talked about where I got stuck in the car park. Because when I was in Kyoto, I was like, I wanted to see Nintendo's headquarters. And I thought it'd be like some sort of amazing building where dreams happen, and it would be something that looked incredible and inspiring. And it was the most
very boring,
dreary. Yeah, it was like it was like an office block out of Slough. It was like an office block out of The Office, the TV show. That sort of dreary building. It looked like that. And then to add an insult to injury, I got locked in the car park, so I lost my car parking ticket. So my experience at Nintendo, very underwhelming, and that's why
my mate went when I was terribly hungover, and we'd had a very heavy night out in Kyoto. We had a very heavy night out, and I went back to Tokyo because I was just done with drinking, and everyone else went to the Nintendo factory, and they just saw the building and saw notably a pair of sort of house shoes in the car park, and they sort of thought it might be
probably
Miyamoto's house shoes or something, or probably yours. I missed precisely nothing for their little sojourn to go and see Nintendo.
They didn't find
Papa Miyamoto.
They didn't find a car parking ticket, did they? Sitting on the floor.
No, they really didn't. No,
God's sake. I love the way most of your stories in Japan start with you being drunk or on a floor.
Correct.
At some point.
Well, who's drinking now? Who's drinking now?
I am indeed drinking Chris, a lemon sour.
His lemon drink. His weak lemon drink.
It's 3%. That's not alcohol. That's
right.
A soft drink in disguise.
That's session.
Absolutely. We've got a heartwarming story this week, though. A student in Japan left his flat-tired bike in a park for a few hours, and something magically happened. Partway to school, a Twitter user, Yaoimo, one of his tyres sprung a leak, and he was too far from his campus to make it the rest of the way on foot before his class started. Luckily, he was close enough to home that he could just about make it back in time to log into his computer and attend class remotely. But this presented another problem. Walking may be slower than riding a bike, but what's even slower is walking while lugging a bike with a flat tyre. With no other options, Yaoimo decided to leave his bike parked at a nearby park while he walked home and attended class, then come back after he was done with the class and collect the bike. However, when he returned to the park that evening, he discovered that someone had left a letter in the bike basket. The letter read, I'm just some old dude with a lot of free time. I saw you were in a jam this morning, so I patched up your flat tire and refilled the air. Bloody hell. The seal isn't perfect, though, so you'll probably want to refill it again soon. If you feel obligated to thank me, please just do something nice for your family or someone. Anyone at all. From the old balloon dude with a lot of free time. Old balloon dude? Apparently there was no context.
Sounds like he's into something, doesn't it?
It was no context.
The old balloon
there.
Dude.
Yeah. But isn't that nice? Isn't that lovely? Inspiring.
That's lovely. And maybe the balloon dude thing means that, like, you know, he wrote like a kanji for balloon rather than tire. I don't know. Like, maybe that's the thing. It's just, it's, you know. Ugh.
Well,
would you feel if you left your car outside and it had a flat tire and someone pumped it up and, you know, gave you a run flat or something, would you feel like your car had been defiled by another man's hand?
Well, this is the thing, right? Yeah. A few people did comment on Twitter. Some were like, cool, that's lovely. But others were like, don't touch my fucking bike. Don't touch my bike. I think I would feel confuddled. I don't think I've ever used that word in my life. Confuddled.
Wow.
I'd be confuddled. I'd be like, oh, that's good, but also creepy that someone just touched my bike and did this entire bespoke service to my bike. And I don't know who they are. And they seem to like balloons. What's going on there? I don't know. I don't know how I feel.
I mind that. It's nice. Is it? I think that's quite nice, personally.
I think.
It is a little bit nice. Is it a little bit nice? I think it might be a little bit nice.
I think you should go around London and try and help people who have left their items around. Like someone's left their bike somewhere in Mayfair. Go and patch it up. Or just nick it.
It's like a video game.
Steal it, Pete. Just
it's like a video game.
That's the British way of doing things. Oh, there's a bike there. I'll take
go
that.
Go off with a big wheelie. Yeah, definitely.
My sister and her boyfriend had some nice bicycles and they're in London and they went inside a library or something to get a book and the bikes were locked up and when they came back the bikes were gone and there was a CCTV camera and someone just turned up and just cut the cables with like a wire cutters and just cycled off with them. So that's the British way of doing things, isn't it?
Yeah, you wouldn't get anyone. I mean, your wheel may very well be in a better state than when you left it, but it also won't be attached to the car, the car or the bike.
Seriously, what a weird story! But I don't know how to feel about that. Add that to the endless list of heartwarming stories we've had from the kindness of strangers in Japan.
Yeah, I like it.
We'll be back with the fax machine just a moment after this break.
Bernie Katz was fun, he was kind. When he walked in, the room just lit up.
And there was something magical about this young man that just had a glint in his eye, that didn't give a shit about anything, but loved everything.
My first impressions were of a huge, vibrant and outgoing personality, all hugs, grins, extravagant language and wild attire.
Always in a leopard skin jacket, whirling around like a windmill. I know, she's a character. I don't know if those people exist anymore. They're sort of dying out. Everything's changed.
It is a bank holiday weekend in London, the late summer of 2017. The streets around Kentish Town, just north of the city and halfway towards Hampstead Heath, are unusually quiet. That evening, in a small, converted flat, just a 15-minute bus ride from King's Cross Station, Bernie Katz, pocket-sized and long-standing front-of-house manager of London's Groucho Club, is found dead by his landlord.
I said to him, what happened? You know, and he said, we are not talking about it. And yes, there have been the rumours. We've all heard. I mean, what did I hear specifically? That he was murdered.
The relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His dad was a proper gangster. Bernie came down, there was a car far from. Guy blows his dad's head off.
They're all part of the same fetid, seething, self-referential nest of vipers that I think the Groucho have become.
Was Bernie depressive? I think yes. When alone, a condition he rarely sought, he had demons that flew about his head.
I get a call from Bernie and he is in £20,000 worth of debt with the Albanian gangsters in Soho. We all collected and paid the debt.
The way that the Albanians operate is very, very peculiar because they did not operate like any other mafia in Europe.
I've never been able to establish exactly what happened and why, but whatever it was so wrong.
Bernie, who killed the Prince of Soho? Listen now. A Stack production, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week, Mr. Dawson?
In the fax machine. We got a message from Amanda and the fax machine. Hello, Chris. I discovered the Abroad in Japan YouTube channel during a time I started to learn Japanese on my own, and I was becoming interested in the culture as well. The first video I remember coming across was titled What Teaching in Japan Is Really Like. It was not long after that I fell down the perpetual rabbit hole. Finding your channel was the tipping stone into my now obsession with Japanese culture, but also the reason I live now in Tokyo. 1 year later, immersing myself in the culture and becoming proficient in the language. One topic that I found to be rarely discussed is the fitness industry in Japan. I myself majored in kinesiology, and I have a strong passion for the fitness topic. In America, the fitness industry has woven itself into the culture and is normalized. However, I found this mindset to be very different in Japan. I don't know why I'm substituting words that aren't there. I think I'm having an emotional problem. Of course, this year is a little bit different, but my question for you is, what is your understanding of the Japanese perception of fitness, weightlifting, gyms, the diet culture? Do you think there will be potential for the big fitness boom? I ask because one of your many encounters of friends poking your belly you previously mentioned of going back to the gym and journey across Japan and the bike adventure. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the subject. Keep up the great work. P.S. Thanks to Pete as well, I guess. She didn't say I guess. But yeah, I mean, look, it's not all about eating shortbread calorie, mate, is it?
How dare you? Actually, no. Calorie mate's awful. The only time I ate that was when I climbed Mount Fuji, because I had to eat something to climb Mount Fuji. And
it's in Metal Gear Solid, mate. It's fun.
I'd rather go back and eat gravel. Probably got more bloody nutritional value and flavour. People in Japan are a lot thinner and healthier than certainly in the UK and the US. Like, when it comes to obesity, it's very, very low in Japan, one of the lowest in the world. I'm not sure how that is. It could be a good diet, could be metabolism. It's probably metabolism, because I know that people here do eat not as healthy, not as healthy as people think, I believe. Mm. But I do go to a gym, though, every now and then. It's not been a good year for that, but there is a gym, and Anytime Fitness is really taking off here. This chain of gyms across the country.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they're busy. People do weightlifting and things, but I'd say generally there is a better diet culture here, and people are more aware of staying fit. I feel like you stand out if you put on weight, and you don't like standing out in Japan. People just don't like to stand out or be different in any way. Mm. And putting on weight is an easy way to do that. I remember there was that law, the Metabo law, a few years ago, where companies would be fined if their employees were overweight or something like that. And certainly when I was a teacher, we had to have a health checkup every year. And if you were heading in the wrong direction, you'd be scolded and you'd have to go and have a consultation with a doctor who'd tell you not to get fat, not to have cholesterol. And then you'd have to keep going and seeing him until you provided him with satisfactory results that you had lost some weight and become a little bit healthier. So, yeah, I think they're a bit harsher on it here. But I don't know if there's going to be a big fitness boom, because I don't think they need it in the same way we do in the West. And it's very shocking for me when I go back to the West, when I go back to the UK or whatever, and just see how many people are overweight, unfortunately. Like, it is a big issue. I think most people in my family are overweight. And it's not a surprise. The supermarkets are just chock full of processed foods and biscuits and crisps and crap. And there's like the supermarkets in the UK are way more filled with bad stuff than Japan. I'll give them credit in Japan. The supermarkets do have more raw foods, whether it's fish or vegetables, whatever. I don't know. People here are healthier. Mm. That's my thoughts. In summary, we got
it's delicious, isn't it?
It's delicious.
Food's delicious, though, isn't it?
I love it. Sushi, isn't it? Pietro from Gloucester says, "Hello there, Chris and Pete."
Peter.
Pietro.
Italian Peter.
Pietro from Gloucester. But I'm from Italy. It's Pietro from Gloucester, but I'm originally from Italy. I moved here 3 years ago to work in the brewing industry. I'm always listening to you guys while I work alone here in the brewery, and I find your topics really interesting to have in the background while I'm making some beer. Now, that sounds like fun. I want to start by saying that, funnily enough, both an apprentice I had and a close friend of mine here in the UK are from Hartlepool, like Pete. Good heavens. That's very rare to meet people from Hartlepool.
We get around.
So I found your accent, Pete, weirdly familiar. Isn't that nice? Now, Chris, in many of your videos, the main topic is sake, its production, and generally the cultural relevance of the product in the Japanese society. Being myself part of the alcoholic beverage industry, I find the process of sake production incredibly fascinating. I got the chance to try a couple of bottles here in the UK not too long ago. The question I have would be directed to both of you, since I believe you can probably answer one half of it each. Is it there a somewhat craft sake market, as we intend it here in the West, a small local brewery run by a couple of people that make usually a higher than industry standard product? Or are there only big famous breweries scattered around the country? And as for craft beer, is the brewing industry and the brewing culture, is it growing in Japan? Or is it still dominated by Sapporo, Asahi and Kirin? Keep up the good work, guys. Pietro from Gloucester. What do you know, Pete? What do you know about alcohol in Japan?
Yeah, I know nothing about it. I don't know craft ale. I don't know how it all kind of gets put together. There's certainly a lot of in the UK. Obviously, any sort of railway arch in London seems to be converted into a craft ale producing facility almost immediately. But yeah, I mean, like, are there kind of like little small bespoke breweries? I mean, there must be, mustn't there? They can't all be owned by whatever the Japanese version of Diageo is.
Well, I mean, it is still in the hands of the big kind of three companies like Suntory and Asahi. Wait, who makes Asahi? Is it just Asahi, isn't it?
I think it's just Asahi, isn't it?
Yeah. Big companies. There are some nice craft sucky places. Like, I did a video with Ryotaro last year called What's Japan's Rarest Sake Taste Like? And we tried some sake called Doboroku, which is this kind of like unrefined sake. And you can, certain regions in Japan can make it. And that's become quite popular. It's very potent, a lot more flavorful than conventional sake because it's unfiltered. So that's pretty nice. But craft beer, every year I've been here for the last 9 years, people always say, oh, you know, craft beer is taking off in Japan. It's taking off. It is, but it's so slow that there's not really been that much change, I feel, in the last 5 years. So you can find it, but it's not anywhere near the level of the UK or the US. But
they'll get there.
They'll get there. They'll
I'm sure. And he's worth checking out on Twitter. Brian Ashcraft has written a couple of books on sake in particular. But he really knows his alcohol. He's a he's a writer for the video game company Kotaku. But and he's really good on there. But his sake books are really, really illuminating. And there's a little bit about the kinds of alcohol in there as well. I think it's just the Japanese Sake Bible. I think
Japanese Sake Bible. That could be good.
I've got a copy of it somewhere, but I don't know. Yeah, check that really, really out, good. Well worth a read. Mm. Find out what's the best one.
Absolutely.
Lovely. I got an email from Bill from New York City. Bill de Blasio, not him. Dear Chris and Pete, I've seen multiple Broadway Japan videos which mention that Japanese people often don't understand or appreciate sarcastic humour. It has me wondering, how do people tell jokes in Japanese? Would Westerners find them funny? What is the essence of Japanese humour, Chris?
Slapstick, running around and banging things. It's more like slapstick and subverting expectations, like having situations where the boss says something funny or inappropriate. I don't know, really. I'm not the one who's good to talk about this. I'm kind of baffled by Japanese comedy, as like a lot of foreigners here. It's not really my thing. Like Shimura Ken's quite good, the guy that passed away of coronavirus, fortunately, last year, one of Japan's biggest comedians. He's got some great sketches on YouTube, and I do find them quite funny. And those are usually him playing like a boss or a character who's doing something a bit stupid or inappropriate or out of, you know, breaking expectations. But it's different. I mean, how to compare it to British humor? I guess British humor is more sarcastic. We're more good at ripping other people apart. Is that humor or is that bullying? I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I'm not the one to really explain, but I'd recommend looking up Shimura Ken on YouTube, and you'll quickly see some of the most popular Japanese sketches and why they are popular with a lot of foreign viewers, because they have been over the years. We got one here from Scott. He says, "Hi, Chris Beat. My name's Scott. I'm from Perth in Australia. Recently, I decided that for my 30th birthday in 2023, I want to do something similar to you and cycle from Tokyo to Kagoshima, which I recently discovered is the sister city to Perth." I didn't know that. It looks to be about 1,400 kilometres. And I'm hoping to cover around 50 to 60 kilometres a day. What advice do you have for someone who's crazy enough to undertake such a massive task? How do you prepare for your trip? And what would you do different if you had to? Love the podcast and the channel, guys. Scott Miller. Scott, I would say, I love the cycle. It was a lot of fun, really rewarding. The best bits were where I was probably just alone in a field cycling quietly and thinking. The worst bits was everything else. And filming, cycling 50 kilometers a day isn't that difficult. The first kind of 3 days, it's quite sore and painful, and then it just feels normal. But the hard bit for me was filming it, editing it on the go. I was a madman. I don't know what I was thinking, to be honest, with the first journey across Japan. I should have hired an editor or filmed it all and then edited it afterwards. But filming it was tough. Thinking up a story every day, thinking up a narrative, it was an impressive achievement, really. If you go back and look at the 28-part series of Journey Across Japan, it's astounding that we were able to think of a story or undertake a challenge every single day to make it kind of interesting and fun. And, you know, Pete obviously cycled for a bit of it. No, actually, you cycled for 1 day, and then you got the section where we just went to cities and had fun. So you got the lucky bit. Do what Pete Donaldson did.
Sounds like I'm working smart and I'm working hard, mate. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Get drunk and trash your Osaka hotel room like Pete Donaldson, or have a Wagyu steak at Corby's best steak restaurant.
Again.
You know, do the Pete Donaldson, or go and look at some monkeys in the mountains of Kyoto. Lucky devil. Yeah.
Mm.
What advice do you have, Pete?
Definitely got the best leg, I would say, out of that
really
whole situation.
You were so bloody lucky.
Compared to everyone else.
Dear.
Yeah, I mean, don't put any, maybe reduce that sort of distance a little bit. Don't put pressure on yourself. Take it relatively often days off, because it's just too much of a, if you're doing 50 to 60 kilometers a day, I mean, it's a bit insane, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's a bit mad, but you can't stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a key point. And also I'd say make sure you plan where you're staying ahead of time, because in Japan, like, hotels can get booked quite easily, and then you're stuffed. Whereas we, in fairness, the one that we did plan on Journey Across Japan was the start and end point of every single day. And if you do that, like, that will take a lot of stress out of the equation. But yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. I would be tempted to do it again and not film it, just because I love the cycle and I regret not being in the moment more, because I was so busy working out how to film a commercial, how to navigate with a paper map, how to do all these stupid challenges, and really would have been nice to just not do that as much. But I loved it. It's a great series, a lot of fun. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Check out the new series of Journey Across Japan, The Lost Islands, featuring Joey the Anime Man and Natsuki, out on the Abroad Japan channel this week. But for now, guys, we'll see you on Sunday, still all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, enjoy the rest of your week. And well, bye, Pete. Have a nice week, Pete.
Bye.
I feel like we never get to say bye
Ta-ta.
To you. Say bye, Pete.
I know. I'm off for some calorie mate, because I'm going to drive to the shops.
Disgust me. It's calorie mate.
Very exhausting.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.